From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today we head to Moscow for the weekly press conference at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs with spokesperson Maria Zakharova. We bring you as much of this press conference as time allows.
Today I have additional information regarding his schedule. On the 16th of April in Moscow, there will be negotiations between Mr. Lavrov and the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Serbia. They will be planning to discuss questions of mutual partnership and regional problems. Additional information regarding this visit and negotiations we will publish at our website in our social media accounts. Now turning to the relevant national agenda, we continue to familiarize you with the steps that Russia takes to help various countries of the world in this difficult period in the world's history, fight against the pandemic. In the framework of partnership between Russia and Turkmenistan based on the principles of strategic partnership, on the 1st of April, Russia sent medical supplies to Turkmenistan, sent medicine, protective equipment, and equipment to perform X-ray researches, intensive care, and many other types of equipment. Turkmenistan, as a measure of mutual cooperation, transferred to Russia Turkmenian supplies on the 1st of April, which were supplied to Astrakhan. We are deeply grateful to the leadership of Turkmenistan for its gesture of goodwill and good neighborliness during the difficult circumstances of the global pandemic. On the 7th of April in Paris, another session of the Executive Board of UNESCO began its work. It will be held in virtual format, with an exception of the human rights procedure of the Committee on Convention and Recommendations. During the event, more than 30 points of the agenda will be reviewed, as well as financial, administrative, and personnel questions. At the focus of our attention, we will discuss the midterm strategy of the organization from the period of 2022 to 2029, and the program of budget from 2022 in 2025, and meeting with the Director General Audrey Azoulay, and the preparations for the 31st session of the General Conference of UNESCO in November. We will hear reports on the implementation of the initiative of educational planning and the progress in the area of the problem of influence of climate change on the cultural and environmental heritage, and the outcomes of the meeting of ministers of culture as in the framework of the G20, and the reform of the program of the World Memory Program and the plan of actions in the interest of SIDS, and the plan of action of UN and the safety of journalists, and the issue of impunity, as well as approval of new programs and appeals to award the status of UNESCO Global Geopark. We are expecting adoption of decisions on the development of the slave route project of UNESCO and the implementation of the global priority Africa. We are planning to adopt a list of memorial dates celebrated in 2022-2023. Three anniversaries submitted by Russia entered this list: 200 years since the birth of Alexander Ostrovsky, 150 years since the birth of Sergei Rachmaninov, and 150 years since the birth of Fyodor Shalapin. The Executive Board will discuss the project of decisions initiated by state parties on the proclamations of International Days of Biosphere Preserves and Geodiversity, and Russia is a co-author of some of these documents. The session will conclude on the 21st of April. I would like to also know that on the 8th of April, Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs of Russian Federation, Mr. Grushko, will be attending the Northern Dimension Forum. The event was organized by the Business Council of the Northern Dimension, as well as the Skolkovo Moscow School of Management. The current forum was dedicated to the interaction to the in the sphere of trade exchange. More than 400 representatives of Russian and foreign business circles took part in this, as well as different NGOs. During the sessions of the working group, sessions and different institutions of the association, we discussed relevant tasks and the possibilities of deepening our cooperation in the defense of environment and energy efficiency, logistics, transport, digitalizations, and the overcoming consequences of the coronavirus epidemic. We are ready to develop our cooperations in the interest of sustainable development of the European region. Another announce, not for the nearest perspective, we're talking about September, from the 2nd to 2nd to 4th September, another session of the Eastern Economic Forum will happen in Vladivostok. It is dedicated to the revitalization of Russian Far East and the broadening of international cooperation in the Asian Pacific region. Previous meetings this 4 months with the participation of India, China, Republic of Korea, Malaysia, Mongolia and Japan testify of that the forum is turning to one of the leading platforms to discuss social economic development of the region. In 2019, more than 8,500 leading representatives of official, expert and business circles of 65 countries of Asia Pacific region took part in this forum. More than 270 different agreements were signed with a total sum of 3.47 trillion rubles in such areas as oil and gas, chemistry, resources, forest and fish industry, agriculture, transport, logistics and aviation, tourism. And the agenda of the upcoming forum will be oriented to search for new decisions in the context of the post-COVID restoration of the economy. We are planning to focus on the potential development of the integrational contour in the broader Eurasia. Currently, we are developing the traditionally broad program of the forum, presupposing plenary and thematic sessions, business dialogue, exhibitions, and other events. We hope that the forum will become another huge step in implementation of our strategic line to reinforce this part of Russia as one of the centers of the economical growth in the Asia-Pacific region. Before I turn to other topics, I would like to say that we continue to develop our presence and broaden our borders in the internet space. As you know, our briefings are being broadcast in our social media, in our websites. You know that many internet monopolies and giants are acting suspiciously, and we're talking about the media sources and the official accounts of state organs. We've heard statements on the unwillingness of a whole range of Western companies to work with the Russian missions and other organizations and offices. A lot has been said about it. We We've heard that all. And now we will be broadcasting on the YouTube platform. As you know, on this 7th of April, the Russian segment of the Internet celebrated its 27th anniversary. The Russian MFA Department of Information and Press contributed to the development of the Russian sector of Internet greatly. In 1998, we became one of the first Russian federal agencies to register our own website. We became one of the first who started online broadcasts of events in social media. And we try to maintain this beneficial tradition and develop it further. We are now on the YouTube. This is a pilot project, and our broadcast is currently being televised on YouTube too. Recently, YouTube had a big update and updated its functional capabilities and made a huge step to become a full-fledged alternative to Western video hosting websites. The thing that differs YouTube from other websites is that it's free from IT monopolies and toss-ups in search queries and other troubles. We hope that our decisions will contribute to support and development of the Russian segment of the Internet and will help establish new generation of Russian resources and web platforms in the Internet. We are tired of this monopoly of the West. We must counter this not only with statements but with concrete actions. Subscribe to our channel and watch the relevant events of our foreign policy. We will provide a link in the text version of the briefing. Now, transferring to another topic, we are watching the situation in Donbas. Unfortunately, the situation is difficult. There is a tendency to aggravation of the situation. The reason for this is the jingoist attitude of Kiev that still is full of illusions regarding the possibility of forced resolution of the conflict at the southeast of the country. The media is hysterical about the mythical Russian threat and the plans of Moscow to attack Ukraine almost tomorrow. This is all happening with the public support of Kiev. The President, Mr. Zelensky, said that the entry of the country into NATO will lead to the end of the conflict. The region is worthy of our attention. This will not bring peace to Ukraine, but will lead to massive escalation situation at the southeast and could lead also to irreversible consequences for the Ukrainian state. We appeal to the Kyiv authorities to be responsible and deal with its obligations regarding as per the Minsk agreement. We think that they should be preoccupied with the program that should lead to peace in Ukraine and its region we are talking about.
There shouldn't be any illusions, fantasies, or provocative actions if the Kievan regime is declaring its desire and strive to go back to peaceful life. It simply should be done. The plan is on the table, but it has been on the table for some time now. And instead of running around this table, instead of claiming and stating things that lead only to provocative actions, and instead of doing these provocative actions, you simply should go and implement the Minsk agreement. Last week, vaccination of the OSCE observer group has started On Russian border points of Gukovo on Donetsk, we are talking about the Russian vaccine Sputnik V. That was the request of the OSCE, and we gave a positive resolution on that. About 20 employees of the OSCE from 15 countries that are working in Rostov region will be vaccinated with the Russian vaccine. This is one of the first cases when the employees of this international organization, and it has 16 field missions in the OSCE member countries, now finally have an opportunity to have an organized vaccination campaign against coronavirus. I'd like to remind you that the OSCE group is working in Russia since July 2014, conducts observation and reports on the situation on two Russian border points on the Russian-Ukrainian border, not under and the keep and control. Contrary to regular information hoaxes from the Ukrainian authorities, throughout the whole time of work of this group, there have been no facts of transfer of Russian military units or military equipment to the Ukraine. That is the famous, rather infamous hobby horse of the Ukrainian regime and many Western media outlets as well as politicians, but throughout the years the situation is rather counterintuitive. Official observers with an official mandate do not see that happening. At the same time, the official propaganda campaign is being waged by Kiev quite to the contrary. So it comes as no surprise that the work of these observers was not covered in the media space. Simply, it wasn't newsworthy. I'd also like to remind you that the creation of this group in the summer of 2014, even before the signing of Minsk agreements, is a certain gesture of goodwill by the Russian party. It's aimed at facilitating peaceful political settlement of domestic Ukrainian conflict in order to encourage the Kievan authorities to stop the punitive operation in the southeast of the Ukraine and to move on to direct dialogue with Donetsk and Luhansk. Unfortunately, this decision was not fully reciprocated by the Kievan authorities. On the contrary, they followed the path of armed escalation, which has led, as you know, to many victims and much destruction. Up until now, the Ukrainian authorities have been evading specific steps for peaceful settlement for situation in Donbass. They continue to ignore the letter and spirit of the Minsk agreements. And by the way, the clauses have very specific pointing out at what's necessary to be settled between the leaders of Ukraine and certain regions of Donetsk and Luhansk within the direct dialogue in the contact group. However, Kiev tries to disregard this part. More and more we hear mottos about Russian threat, even though at the same time it is the Ukrainian army that is building its presence by the line of contact and shall the peaceful civilians of Donbass. And that's the reason to think whether such gestures of goodwill from Russia, as for example the OSCE observation mission, does it have any positive effect for peaceful settlement of the crisis? And now more on what's happening in the Ukraine. Recently, during yet another attack of Russophobia, there was a decision made to bring together a number of sanctions also against Россотрудничество, which is a Russian agency for working with compatriots living abroad, and all kind of activity is prohibited, even the activity that that agency has never been doing. And that brings us to the fact that this agency simply isn't capable of working fully and normally for Russian Center of Science and Culture in Kiev. And these sanctional measures counter the current agreement between the government of the Russian Federation and the Cabinet of Minister of the Ukraine. That's the agreement of the 27th of February 1998. Therefore, we have directed note to the Foreign Ministry of the Ukraine in order to clarify the position of Kievan authorities on this matter and to clarify whether the Ukrainian parties intending to keep the commitments according to this agreement. The thing is that we have not yet received an answer, but I'd like to note that the Ukrainian side has its own national cultural center, and its activity is being actually governed under this agreement that I have mentioned before. Therefore, we're waiting for an answer in order to understand the Ukrainian position. There are many questions that we have received before the briefing from foreign media and from Russian media regarding the military biological activity of U.S., also neighboring the Russian borders. Mr. Patrushev spoke in detail to Russian media about that. As an addition to that, and also responding to the questions that we have received before the briefing, I'd like to say that the Russian side has been, for several years, been expressing tremendous concern regarding the military biological activity of U.S. in its own territory as well as abroad. I'd also like to say that, you know, when we talk about a concern, by that we mean not only the word, but also a number of practical steps that we're also taking. That is interaction with our neighbors. These are also negotiations dedicated to this issue. We're also raising this question in international organizations which are dedicated to this topic, as well as many other steps. So please do not think that this, the word of concern, is just a number of letters and sounds. No, that is not so. It's a comprehensive plan of actions that our country has been doing for some time. There are legitimate questions about the American activity in biolabs that violate the BWC Convention. Since there is no verification mechanism within this Biological Weapons Convention, this mechanism has been blocked since 2001. Guess by who? By Washington. So the American party cannot be obligated to share the information about these biological facilities, so it is not possible. What's telling in this context is that the American labs have happened to be right in the center of large international scandals. For example, during the investigation of terrorist attacks that had to do with sending of poisoned has been sending anthrax packages. He was working in Fort Detrick, which is the forefront of Pentagon's program for bio and hazard protection. Besides, Russia has multiple times voiced its concern about the U.S. activity in biological activity in post-Soviet space. For example, there are many questions about research center for public health named after Mr. Lugar. It has been funded by Pentagon and it's situated in Georgia, and it also has the Office for Medical Research of Army between the U.S. and Georgia. And we had many questions about that. In order to mitigate all these issues, we have been consistently promoting intensifying efforts to strengthen the BWC regime, also by adopting a legally binding protocol to the convention with an effective verification mechanism. That would also fall within the logic of the Russian initiative to improve the measures of trust-building measures on BWC, exchange of information on biological activities outside of the national territory. We also believe that the Article 5 of this convention could be initiated, which mandates that all countries should consult with each other regarding all issues on BWC. As for human rights, you know, we're under informational bombardment, so to speak, by the Western partners on human rights. They're never fine with anything, and they keep expressing their concerns, bordering on hysteria, about anything, any topic that's so dear to their heart, or people dear to them, to their hearts, that believe to be innocent victims, and so on and so forth. We have said multiple times to our Western partners that we are bona fide participants of all those mechanisms that deal with human rights within the international organizations which we are members of. We have been truthfully and faithfully delivering on the commitments that we have taken upon ourselves. We have also said, and we'd like to repeat that to our Western colleagues, that the number of issues that they have in their own countries on human rights. Leave them no opportunity, no chance to voice any concerns to anyone until they solve their issues at home. For example, let's take the Netherlands. At all levels, I'm talking about all levels, be that government institutions or non-governmental institutions that are being supported by the government. Also, mass media, they continuously and regularly, they're unabating in saying that it's all bad with human rights in Russia, and it has truly become a real trend in the Netherlands. Now, let's take a look at what's happening in the Netherlands, what makes, what could actually keep the Netherlands busy. Last week, the Court of Appeals of The Hague has ruled that the Dutch authorities are absolutely legitimately refusing to repatriate the subject of the kingdom, of the woman who's staying in the refugee camp in the north of Syria. At the same time, court recognizes that the woman is suffering from a psychological disorder, and she's injured, and she's kept in inhumane conditions without food and potable water. Nevertheless, the Dutch team does not see, or rather, does not want to see the political or practical feasibility of providing help to her. This is not just a woman, it's the subject of this country. And the authorities of the country refuse her help. And that is human rights to boot. Ostensibly, to return this woman, it would take to send to Syria the Dutch specialist, and that is, as is said, ruled out in the light of risks to their life and safety. That's quite interesting. Besides, The Hague does not have any formal connection, neither with official Damascus, nor with the groups that are controlled in north of Syria. How's that for a democratic approach? So it seems that there are no diplomatic relations. The Hague does not have any questions about the human rights in this or that country. Even when it's about the subject of the state, of the various state. And it's not an isolated incident. Before, the Dutch justice has ruled similarly about the lack of need to return a group of women and children, also Dutch subjects, from the Syrian camp of refugees. Yet again, they are the subjects of the Netherlands. They are staying on the territory of a different country. They need help. They don't have, not just what they wanted to have in general. They don't have crucial things to keep alive, and the Netherlands see no issue with human rights there, and they're talking that the lack of need to provide any help to them.
Well, I would like to repeat just once again that we are speaking about their own subjects. Why don't they help their own citizens? I mean the authorities of the Netherlands, but at the same time they're always taking care about the citizens of other countries. The problem of the repatriation of such citizens, of course, is a, as we would say, a headache for many Western countries, but the approach of the Netherlands is different. Even among them, because the leading advocates and champions of democratic values not only turning a blind eye to the blatant violations of the human rights, and they each and every time trying to strip them out of the their citizenship, and The Hague has tried to make this practice traditional. Well, here goes for the judicial practice is one of the most developed judicial countries in the world. And the other topic related to the United States of America, well, every single day on different levels, different officials, political leaders, offices, institutions, and the administration of the United States expresses his concern over the situation with the human rights all over the world. We once again say that this is a noble thing, but we would like to say first you need to solve your own internal issues. That's why These problems need to be solved and resolved first and foremost. Not try to waste your energy to solve these problems in other countries, because the humanist treat of the prison guards with the inmates in American prisons causes an utmost concern. We are not the first ones to make such questions. There are many works and books written about this issue, and it's been discussed all over the world. Well, this violence has become a common thing.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.